This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to discuss reporting from our next guest, Akbar Shahid Ahmed, about what the Biden administration knew about Israel's violations of international law and its assault on Gaza, when they knew it, and why President Biden and Secretary of State Antony Blinken continue to defend U.S. support for Israel, despite intelligence reports warning that such support could amount to U.S. complicity under international law. Akbar Shahid Ahmed writes that in the final weeks of his administration, Biden personally considered new American intelligence about Israel's devastating offensive in Gaza that prompted concerns that U.S. and Israeli officials were violating U.S. and international law, and then rejected suggestions from advisors to reduce American involvement in the war, according to three former U.S. officials. On Friday, Reuters reported that top Biden policymakers considered U.S. intelligence showing doubts among some Israeli military lawyers about whether their tactics were legal and their belief there was evidence to support war crimes charges. Akbar Shahid Ahmed is senior diplomatic correspondent for HuffPost based in D.C. and author of the forthcoming book, Crossing the Red Line. It's on the Biden administration's role in the war in Gaza. Hi, Akbar. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for your reporting.
Thanks for having me back, Rose.
Well, it's great to have you. You spoke with eight former officials who requested anonymity so they could share sensitive conversations. Can you talk more about what they told you? What did you learn from them?
Absolutely. So the period we're talking about in this piece, Rose, is these final fateful moments of the Biden administration where you're a year into the war, you have a death toll of tens of thousands of Palestinians by this point. It's very clear that Israel has leveled most of Gaza. And you have Donald Trump, who's about to take the presidency. So you're handing over your entire policy to Trump, who's an open skeptic of international law, who not only has not shown consideration for human rights, often has praised apparent war crimes. You know, he's praised people who seem to have pushed the bounds of illegal military actions. The Biden administration was looking down that, and they had a possibility. What I heard from a lot of officials is that there was a sense following the election, following the fear of being seen as too tough on Israel, hurting the Democrats in the election, which is in itself concerning that that would be a major factor in that policy, but it absolutely was. There was a sense among U.S. officials that finally the Biden administration would acknowledge what the Israeli war had become with U.S. support, that it had morphed from a retaliation to Hamas's really brutal invasion of Israel, absolutely terrifying moment, into this much broader and really devastating offensive. And what I found, Rose, was there was new intelligence assessments that were so concerning, officials told me, that once these were found, they were really taken right up to the level of the president almost immediately. What this intelligence talked about was Israeli officials' discussions among themselves. It also, really importantly, pointed to U.S. culpability. And that's where the Biden administration sat up and paid attention, because there's international law in play here. There's also U.S. law. Under U.S. law, you are not allowed to provide American weapons to any force or nation that you know is barring U.S.-funded humanitarian aid. Many lawmakers, almost all Democrats, many human rights groups, independent experts, had been saying for months Israel was blocking American-funded aid while receiving American military equipment. Now this intelligence showed the president himself that there was a really strong basis for thinking that. So what officials described to me was a really almost make or break moment for Biden's policy, where he could have shifted away and he could have said, actually, after all this time, given the intelligence, given what we've seen, we don't want to be in this position of supporting this campaign anymore, while continuing to say we're a partner of Israel, of course, recognizing the U.S. alliance. And instead, the Biden administration chose to kick the can to Donald Trump, who, as we saw, upon taking office, has empowered some of the most extreme instincts from the Israeli government and worse than the war.
So to stick with Biden for a few more minutes, according to the Wall Street Journal, the Biden administration approved $32 billion in weapon sales to Israel since October 2023. And the company that's brought in the most business is Boeing. We're going to do this on another show, but the Journal and others have looked at these weapons companies and who made the most off that. So the Biden administration approved these weapons sales. The latest death toll is now 69,000, and it's continuing as more bodies are found. Gaza has the highest number of child amputees per capita in the world. And so many people say this could not have happened without full support from the Biden administration. Who in the Biden administration pushed back and said that these weapons sales should stop?
So the Biden administration, from the very day of Israel experiencing that attack by Hamas on October 7th, began to rush through approvals for American weapons shipments through processes that would normally take weeks or even months. They started to do it within a matter of hours. And what's really interesting about how these Biden administration officials chose to do this, Rose, is they kept it just under the threshold where they would have to reveal what they were doing. So they were often using older weapon sales or weapons transfer agreements. They were trying to evade accountability. That was very, very clear, and evade transparency in this process. Some people were pushing back. I broke the news quite early in the war that a senior and experienced official who had been overseeing some of these weapons sales, Josh Ball, resigned from the State Department. You did have several people do that. You also had some folks inside the Biden administration. USAID, led by Samantha Power, famously a writer who documented genocide, USAID did repeatedly ask the Biden administration to reconsider its weapons transfers. There was a moment where some of those arguing, some of Biden's advisors, were able to get him to withhold one weapons shipment, and they very, very quickly abandoned that effort. They essentially looked at the reaction, especially from hardline pro-Israel voices, and they abandoned the effort on weapons, not based on legality or whether there was an actual improvement on the ground in Gaza, but based on political fear. That's what's quite clear. So there were people pushing back. There were people worried. In my new reporting, I also reveal that Secretary of State Tony Blinken, who was one of Biden's closest advisors, one of the most public, visible defenders of his policy, Tony Blinken was privately asking fellow officials, are we helping commit ethnic cleansing? Mm-hmm. So when you have that level of suspicion and you're taking it that seriously, that suggests that these Biden officials were not blind to what they were doing, but there was a choice to continue on that course. And I just note, you know, the official death count that we have from the Gaza Ministry of Health is, of course, very likely an undercount. Based on my estimates from studies I've seen, during the Biden era, at least 93,740 Palestinians were killed, including those under rubble, including those who died from hunger and avoidable deaths. Because don't forget, it's not just these huge airstrikes that we've seen, this tremendous bombing. It's also the way that Palestinians, this population of 2.2 million people, has been worn down through displacement after displacement after displacement and U.S.-backed limitations on supplies. What I've heard from humanitarian officials at the highest levels of the Biden administration, they've told me, look, we've dealt with crises in Ukraine and Sudan and Ethiopia. We've never been in a situation where aid has been so restricted and contested with the participation of an American partner and American officials. And that's what's so chilling here.
So again, Akbar, you report that Secretary of State Antony Blinken raised the prospect that Israel was committing ethnic cleansing to fellow U.S. officials. This is according to another official formerly at the State Department who spoke with you. And yet earlier this year, Blinken was interviewed by the New York Times, and he was asked, are you concerned that you might be presiding over what the world might see as a genocide? He said, no. First, this is not a genocidal war. Second, as to how the world views this, I can't fully answer that. And I think what a lot of people are asking about here, Akbar, is that this is really the first assault war that people around the globe have watched happen in real time. So people are wondering, okay, so Biden got this information from the Israelis that they might have been committing war crimes, but he was seeing what we were seeing. that people were being killed on a daily basis, that the destruction of buildings, of hospitals, of colleges, of you name it, was happening on a daily basis. They were seeing this just like we were.
Right, the and this is what several frustrated officials did say to me about this new intelligence and this kind of shuffle at the end of the Biden administration. They said, look, this has all been clear throughout, right? This is not is really tactics, and in many instances, Israeli tactics got harsher once they realized there would not be a response from the US. So, for example, the first big Israeli hospital raid, it's almost unimaginable to think about it now, was actually November 2023, and that was a big moment at the time. The Biden administration endorsed the Israeli narrative that led to the raid of that hospital and the arrest of many medical workers. And since then, we've seen that happen dozens of times. So it wasn't just that Israeli behavior was getting worse measurably, it was that it was being aided in getting worse by US officials' choices. I'd say for Blinken and Jake Sullivan, Biden's national security advisor, Brett McGurk, his Middle East coordinator, these are all people who are in public life, have high-ranking positions now at think tanks and universities, and they want to be shaping the discourse about foreign policy going forward. And it's striking to see that they're not willing to come out and say, we made a mistake, let's reflect. They've instead said, no, our policy was great in the long run, and they've talked about strategic benefits, saying, well, it helped Israel weaken Iran's influence in the region. They've said, well, it would have been worse without us. But we haven't seen an honest reckoning with their embrace of Israel's tactics and views. And I just think on Blinken saying, we don't know if it was a genocidal war. We don't know. We haven't gotten a legal determination. But there's two things in that, right? One is genocide does not necessarily have to be an intentional erasure of a whole community. A lot of experts have noted that genocide can be a byproduct of your military campaign. And that's what a lot of experts have seen here. Even if Israel was not necessarily pursuing a genocidal policy, that could be the effect. And what a lot of officials in the Biden administration have told me is people close to Blinken, people close to Biden, got the very clear message. These officials don't want to be told they're breaking the law, so don't reach that conclusion, right? So the sense among government lawyers investigating matters like ethnic cleansing, genocide, war crimes was don't go there, don't reach that finding, because as soon as you reach that finding, that makes your boss more culpable. And I have a quote from someone in here where they talk about the International Criminal Court, which is pursuing Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And they say if the US had reached a finding that Netanyahu broke the law, we would be helping the ICC, which, right, that's not maybe what the US wants to do as Israel's partner. Is it not what the US might want to do for accountability and for the questions of global justice that it said it wants to champion?
Well, that's the other question about accountability, Akbar. More reports are going to come out. There's a new documentary that's called Breaking Ranks Inside Israel's War, and Israeli soldiers are now speaking out, some publicly, some anonymously. Daniel, the commander of an IDF tank unit, said, quote, "If you want to shoot without restraint, you can." And I want to play one clip from an Israeli soldier who says that Palestinians were being used as human shields. He spoke in a muffled voice to France 24 English.
I have a lot of regrets. In the rules of engagement in Gaza, like every male is considered a terrorist between like the age of 15 to 16.
The 20-year-old reservist served for 7 months in Gaza and claims it was a routine practice for the Israeli army to use Palestinians as human shields.
We want like them to be in the danger and to be like wounded or killed instead of the soldiers. When you raid like a building, so you sent in first a Palestinian to go and open the doors and to look for booby traps and other dangerous things.
So that is a soldier speaking with France 24 English. His voice was muffled. He said that Palestinian civilians were used as human shields. And then again, there's a new documentary. It just came out from ITV. It's called Breaking Ranks Inside Israel's War. And a number of IDF soldiers are talking about shooting without restraint. More and more is going to come out, Akbar, And it makes me really think about Iraq, because a lot of U.S. soldiers said the same thing about what they did in Iraq. Where do you think this is going to lead, specifically with the Biden administration? Will anyone be held accountable for sending weapons to Israel? And then what about Israeli officials?
I think your reference to Iraq is a very useful one, because two things converged to make the Biden administration's policy on Gaza especially damaging. One was that legacy of the war on terror, where abuses and wanton violence to a huge degree were tolerated and then largely never punished, particularly among senior American officials. So that was made clear, that precedent. And then the broader systemic impunity for Israeli forces well before this war. So what that soldier is describing, yes, that is a practice the Israelis have used in this war. Israeli military practices that amount to potential gross violations of human rights have been documented for decades and not punished by the U.S. So I think the risk of not having accountability has now become very, very clear. Will it be legal or will it be political? I think there's a real pushback in the Democratic Party, and you'll see a public reckoning, certainly as some of these officials try to seek higher office. I think, for instance, Jake Sullivan, Biden's national security advisor, very likely wants to be Secretary of State at some point or may run for office himself. I think that's where those conversations are going to come about. And then there's the international prospect, right? So I mentioned briefly the International Criminal Court prosecutions. Some activists have sought to take even US officials to the ICC and to broader authorities. And then there are other countries that exercise what's called universal jurisdiction, where they say, if you've committed or been involved in a major crime, we can prosecute you. So that, with the global awareness that we've discussed of this war and what went on and how seemingly indiscriminate and disproportionate it was, I do think the appetite for international avenues is strong. Domestically, I think we have such a weakened structure in the U.S. of holding public officials accountable for foreign policy decisions that it's very hard to see that. But I could see it potentially even through Congress, but not maybe in court.
In our remaining minutes, Akbar, what is next here? It's also very important to point out that according to reports, you've got 8 Palestinians still being killed every day.
Yeah, you know, by in a month of a sort of assumed ceasefire or a stated ceasefire that has not seen a total reduction in killing, we've seen hundreds of Palestinians killed in this moment. And the Trump administration, in a lot of ways, is echoing the Biden team now, essentially saying, trust the U.S. to be the arbiter, trust the U.S. to run the control of aid into Gaza, the governance of Gaza. So the new question is, can we move to a phase 2 of a ceasefire without Israel resuming a major military campaign? I would say my hopes of that were higher maybe even a week ago, where it still seemed like the Trump administration was pursuing what Biden didn't, of being more openly pressuring Israel. Now it seems the Trump administration is backing more into a reflexively pro-Israel corner. You saw this also in President Trump seeking to help Netanyahu in his domestic political battles. If Trump decides to behave in that Biden style of a bear hug of Netanyahu, I think we're even further away from peace and stability, and there's a lot of risk for Palestinians who are still massively displaced, are still in an area where there hasn't been reconstruction. And really importantly, people might not know this, the aid infrastructure has been decimated even worse as Israel has deregistered some of the biggest humanitarian groups. So we're at a lot of risk going into a sensitive period of the winter.
And Akbar, just in 30 seconds, there have been reports about Palestinians who have left Gaza to receive desperately needed health care. Mm-hmm, and they're all wondering, are we going to be able to go back? The Washington Post had that very surreal piece about the Trump relocation plan. He wants to turn it into a Riviera of the Middle East. What's the latest on that? And we've got about 30 seconds.
I met some of those folks. And it's just stunning to think that they have had to endure so many months of uncertainty. I think the only serious pushback, again, could come from an international standpoint, maybe from Trump's own base, to not have such a heavy U.S. investment in this pie-in-the-sky dream of depriving Palestinians of their dignity, which we know will only lead to further frustration, anger, pain, bloodshed.
Akbar Shahid Ahmed is senior diplomatic correspondent for HuffPost, author of the forthcoming book on the Biden administration's role in the war on Gaza called Crossing the Red Line. Thanks so much for your reporting. Thank you for joining us, Akbar.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.